to the People's Show, coming to you live from the Kintech Studio, Kintech Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Find your perfect fit at kintech.net. 650-650 into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox if you want to be part of the People's Show. Three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus online at dunbarlumber.com. Busy show today. Danny Webster will join us in about 10 minutes. Randy Mueller in the second half of the show from the Athletic Football Show, the GM podcast. We'll touch base with offseason, pro days. Caleb Williams throwing today, potential first overall pick at his pro day. We'll get the executives' perspectives as we call both guests down the Dispatch Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Hotline. First call, the only call. Dom, how's it going?
I'm groovy, baby. How are you?
Groovy. Is everyone chilled out now?
Mike Williams is a New York Jet.
Stop it.
I don't know what a Tom Ham sandwich is or whatever it's called, but...
Yeah, what was that? The Jets were posting sandwich?
Well, a fan ordered a sandwich for Mike Williams to Florham Park.
Oh, all right.
And many believe it was the tipping point.
If a sandwich is the thing that got him signed
It's a damn good sandwich, Bick.
Not Aaron Rodgers? Because remember, that was the thing. Aaron Rodgers said he could go to Green Bay. And free agents want to sign there. Yeah. A sandwich is the thing that got Mike Williams.
I mean, listen, it's a good sandwich. The only thing that can really take the Jets down now is the turf at MetLife.
A bunch of IR all-stars over there.
Put some real grass in there.
Meadowlands right now.
Woody.
All right. We do it every day here on the People Show. It's not new. It's the tea.
Thank you, Bic. The not new tea. Today's hot tea.
It's still fresh.
Yeah.
It's not stale tea that's been sitting there with a tea bag in there.
Does tea get stale? I don't think it does.
Are you trusting it for more than...
It's tea. It's herbal.
Right. But if a tea is out...
We're wasting time.
I mean, that's what we do.
That is true. It shouldn't be the People Show. It's the time-wasting show.
The time-wasting hour.
It's what we really are. We're just a bridge to Canuck Central.
Hey, man.
All right. Hot tea from yesterday.
Oh, it's hot now. Okay,
just,
here we go.
Just a couple points before we get to Danny Webster. 3 points from Petey last night with one empty net goal. Hughes looked dominant. Miller felt inevitable. What do we think of the Canucks game last night?
Yeah, honestly, it strikes me as a bit similar to the Winnipeg Jets game, where the Jets look so gassed, and 5-0 looks fantastic, and it's very flattering, and you feel better, obviously, but there wasn't a whole lot I'm taking out of that game just because it didn't look like it was equal stakes or
equal
efforts.
Are you saying the Sabres lost that game?
No, the Canucks were full value. Don't get me wrong. Like the expected goals were outrageous. I don't know how Brock Besser didn't score
right?
three goals.
Miller, too.
Is very unfortunate. Like that first power play, three grade A prime chances. You can't really want much more. And four if you include the Suter one. But there was at least three that absolutely should have gone in. And there was just multiple moments over the course of the game where the Canucks were in control the whole way. Didn't really get an honest effort from Buffalo. They're on a back-to-back. They're obviously still regrouping their season. Mm-hmm. But by and large, I don't come out of there and saying like, I told y'all about Elias Pettersson. If the Sabres pushed back at any level and it was clearly a game where they needed to be 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10, I'd be sitting here and say, like, the worry about Elias Pettersson's overstated. But for all the people that have their concerns. What's that?
Sat was saying on the post game yesterday.
That's Satyar Shah. That's not me. I do think. So I heard a funny line over Christmas.
We're going back. Okay.
No, I can't remember who said this, but it was essentially. We don't even have good arguments for is Die Hard a Christmas movie anymore.
No.
It's people just shouting into the echo chamber. I don't even know if we have good arguments about the Elias Pettersson thing anymore.
I gave you one yesterday.
No, and it's not good.
It was good. He had a down period.
Yeah,
we
19 games. It's 19 games. But the overarching
season, yes.
No, but the overarching conversation that you're trying to bring up is he going to be good enough for the playoffs essentially? That's basically what it is.
Not yesterday. I was just saying that he had a down period, a down quarter of the season.
Sure. But you won't care about that if he plays well in the playoffs.
Correct.
So,
well, we live in the here and now.
But everything is funneling towards game 83.
Yes.
So for the people that say, oh, he doesn't play well in the playoffs, simultaneously say, well, the bubble playoffs don't matter. That means you don't really have any data to suggest, oh, Elias Pettersson's not good in the playoffs. Mm. So it's kind of just a misnomer. You're just saying it for the sake of saying it. It's not really a good argument.
But you will agree with me that you're allowed to criticize a player who is underperforming to his standard, correct? Like, we're allowed to point that.
Of course.
Okay, then we're
But
on
I'm
the
just
same
saying
page.
Here, like, I'm not coming out today and be like, oh, Elias Pettersson got some points last night, and now everyone should shut up about their complaints. I get the complaints. I think they're misguided in general, but everything's pointing towards the playoffs. I don't look at what happened last night and say, oh, they're steeled themselves for the playoffs. I want to see one of like seven games in a row, basically.
Understood.
Some strong performances, but they were significantly better than the Sabres yesterday, who just looked gassed.
From hot tea to hot fries, Frygate was solved yesterday at Rogers Arena. Fans
okay,
were
define
served-
solved.
We have photographic evidence that fans were served heaping piles of fries on Tuesday night.
What was the average
full value?
Amount?
It's like 25 to 30 fries.
Per serving?
It looked like it.
All right. Well,
it was a heaping pile.
That's strong.
Heaping pile. So glad to see that that was solved. And on the heels of that today, this came out from the Miami Marlins. And I wanted to bring it up because you would love to see this in Vancouver. It may never happen,
okay,
mind you. But how good would this be? The Marlins are selling an all-you-can-eat seat.
Oh, I'm already in.
Starting at $52.
I'm in.
That includes, through the seventh inning, four items per trip. You can take as much as you want of water, cookies, peanuts, popcorn, hot dogs, chili nachos, cheeseburgers, and nachos with cheese. Non-alcoholic beverages are included.
So if you want to just hot dogs and Coke, you're solid.
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty good. $52?
I'm saying.
That's not
bad.
Now
imagine this. Rogers Arena, you pay let's convert this to Canadian. So let's say roughly $65 all you can eat seat.
Ranger texting it. Americans eat like they have free healthcare.
That's true. I mean, yeah. Savage, but yeah. $65 and you get everything on that list.
So how much are, like, peanuts at a ballpark? Classic thing, right?
$8, I think.
Stop it. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it'd be, like, $4 or $5. Five max.
No, not
for a bag of
not
peanuts?
Not today.
All right. Well,
not
then that's already
economy.
A bit massive deal.
Yeah.
I guess ballparks don't treat it like bar counters or just bowl of peanuts. There.
I could
just
see this at a Warriors game. Because they already have fantastic deals on food.
That'd be interesting. Like a pilot project, just test it?
Right, exactly.
I see you working.
Here's another idea I came up with in the bullpen, and everyone seemed to think that it was a bad one, for the Canucks anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see them lean into this.
The fry thing?
Yeah.
No, you're so wrong.
This is my idea. Fans, if you agree with me, 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. When a player scores a hat trick, everyone with a ticket gets a free serving of fries the next time they come to Rogers Arena. I think it's a great promo. Think about it. Last night, Pettersson sitting on two goals, empty netter. You know how thrilled the fans would be if he had scored a hat trick on an empty netter? The place would go berserk.
This is like
that's true promotion. That's marketing, pick.
This is like when they win, like a basketball team wins and puts up 100 points. Free tacos to whatever establishment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you get quotes like Giannis saying, like, oh, I really wanted to get the fans tacos tonight. Come on, man. Come on. That's good stuff.
But that's like good partnering with brands that there's a
they
shared
partner with McDonald's. They already do it. The $4 game day Big Mac.
That's different though.
Do a free fry every time there's a hat trick.
All right. Coming up here, we got Danny Webster joining us here. 650-650 catching up on the inbox here. Ryan, not sure what you're talking about, Bic. Canucks have been dominant in five of the last seven, and in one of the games, they played one terrible period against the Colorado Avalanche. Well, they weren't too inspiring against Washington, and Winnipeg, again, Winnipeg game was, that team was flat. So they absolutely should have won it. I mean, like, true competition. Let's see what it looks like. And teams that are really pushing each other. Winnipeg was not putting up a fight against Vancouver on that March 9th game. Fantastic win. But they were exhausted in that game. But Anaheim is Anaheim. 2-1 squeaker versus LA. It'd be a nice stretch here if they can go from Buffalo all the way through to like the second LA game, just really looking solid as they get ready for game one. I mean, Rick Tocchet here is talking about the team ramping up their own performance as they get ready for game one of the playoffs. Who could the Canucks be facing? We were chatting last week to Alex Doherty from the Tennessee, and could it have been the Preds this week? Let's check in on the Vegas Golden Knights with Danny Webster, who joins us now from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Danny, how are you?
Doing well, Beck. How are you?
Excellent. Keeping an eye on the wild card standings, and you know, a while ago we would have said, "Well, Vancouver finishes first. The Oilers and the Golden Knights finish 2-3. One of them take each other out," and we didn't really contemplate the Vegas Golden Knights sliding down to wild card 2 and a scenario that might be developing where maybe they don't even make the playoffs right now. What is the tone right now within the Golden Knights organization of what's happening?
Yeah, right now I would say it's a little bit of a 50-50 here. You talk to the guys after last night's game, it was a 5-3 loss to Tampa Bay, but I think for the first time in probably a good long minute, it seemed like the Golden Knights were very pleased with how that game turned out. They felt like that they controlled play for most of the game at 5-on-5. They felt like that they dictated the way that they wanted to play that game. And for the most part, I think they did. So they're obviously feeling very good, I think, about where their game is now with 3 wins in 5 games. The unfortunate thing is, as Bruce Cassidy mentioned this morning, you only have 14 games left to figure this out. And right now they're still at 5-10-1 in their last 16 games. With now the Minnesota Wild 3 points behind them, they're now 2 points back of the LA Kings for the third spot in the Pacific. So there's not a lot of time to figure this out. But I think right now, considering where it was maybe 2-3 weeks ago, the Golden Knights are feeling a little bit better about where their game is at. Obviously, they still got a long way to go with some big games coming up.
Is there any resemblance to the 2021-22 season where there was an element where, you know, the public would say, well, here's a team that's been to a cup final and other conference finals. They'll figure it out, and the Vegas Golden Knights are going to go to the playoffs, and they ultimately don't in that season. Is there any element to that that they see kind of landmarkers that are similar to what you saw in the past?
Yeah, I think when you look at the two seasons, I think the one thing that kind of is eerily similar is just the fact that they were dealing with so many man games lost that year. And now I think now they're leading the league in man games lost. So that's definitely a component to where they see kind of a similarity. And obviously now without Mark Stone for at least the rest of the regular season, that does cause a huge blow in that regard. I think right now what we're seeing here is a combination of goaltending fizzling out a little bit. We're seeing Aiden Hill and Logan Thompson have definitely come back down to earth. Aiden Hill has definitely not looked like the guy that won them a Stanley Cup last year. Logan Thompson has been up and down for the majority of the year, but he's coming off a big game on Sunday. So they're hoping that going into tomorrow against Seattle that he can put forth a strong rebounding effort there. And I just think that when you look at the way that this team played last year, the one thing that was always so important to them was just doing the little things well. Bruce Cassidy called them an imperfect team all year long, but they always did the small things at the right times, and it paid off for them in the long run. I think right now you're seeing a lot of lapses defensively. You're seeing a lot of inopportune goaltending from both Aiden Hill and Logan Thompson, and right now there's just no continuity at the blue line. When you're talking about Shea Theodore working his way back from back surgery that he was out for 3 months, now you've shaken up your third pairing with Ben Hutton and Alec Martinez instead of Zach Whitecloud and Nick Hague. And now Alex Pietrangelo has been out of the lineup since Tuesday. So there are some similarities, but I feel like right now this is a little bit different because of what we saw from them last year and what we know what this team is capable of.
So famously, obviously, guys are out of the lineup in Vegas. Is that the biggest issue, or is there actually like functional things on the ice that you look at and say, like, this has been their Achilles heel that's starting to show out?
I think there's definitely a bit of both to that. I do think that there is something to be said about the fact that they lost so many man games during the regular season. Obviously, Mark Stone being out, Jack Eichel missed 6 weeks with knee surgery. Shea Theodore, like I mentioned, he was out for 3 months. Mm-hmm. Alec Martinez missed time. Nick Hague missed time. Like, I do think that there is some totality in missing those games. But at the same time, you watch the Golden Knights and you see that they're not the same team that we saw last year, not even the same team we saw a couple of years ago when they made it to the Western Conference Final and in back-to-back years in the bubble and the COVID year. There's a lot of interesting intricacies where you watch them and they're just not as tight defensively. They're not playing well in front of their own goal. They're allowing goals that really a Bruce Cassidy team doesn't really give up into that much of an often kind of thing. So you're seeing these little things trickle up and then you wonder, well, what in the world do they need to do to fix it? And then it's really the same kind of message, is that you need to play a little bit tighter. You need to be on your toes. You need to do this. You need to do that. And it has not clicked so far. So like I said, the fact that they've won 3 out of 5 and have played their best hockey in a little bit during this stretch, I think gives them some confidence, but they are running out of time here to figure this out.
This hasn't been a new phenomenon as well for the Golden Knights. Like, it's not as if the last 14 games has gone poorly. This is stretching to basically the new year, and I think you'd even say a little bit before. There was a hiccup right before the roster freeze as well. So this has kind of been long-standing, and now when we get to the height of the season, that's why I kind of started this off all saying, like, there was an expectation that, oh yeah, they'll figure it out, but this has been reoccurring for some time here, and that, for from an outside perspective, I would imagine is troubling to the team.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think the one key thing here is Bruce Cassidy has mentioned this, is when you talk about a Stanley Cup hangover, usually you see that at the beginning of the year rather than maybe December or January. Well, the Golden Knights got off to the best start ever for a defending champion at winning 11 of 12 games and got points in all 12 of those games. So there is definitely, I think, some motivation coming out of the gate to wanting to be better in that area. And then they had the run where they started getting hurt. They started dealing with a little bit of inconsistency in goaltending. And suddenly now you're starting to see maybe a little bit of cracks in the armor here. But yeah, to your point, when in December it looked like they were starting to get things going, and then right before the Winter Classic is kind of when things started to fall off the rails. They weren't playing like themselves, and you thought that going into the All-Star break, which is kind of what happened last year, when they came back from the All-Star break, they were struggling. Right after they lost Stone to back surgery last year, I think they lost 6 of 8 going into the break, and then they come out of the break and go 22-4-5 to finish first in the West. And I think a lot of people expected that this year. Only this time, they come out of the break, they snap Edmonton's 16-game winning streak, and you're thinking, okay, here we go again. And it's just it's the same little things over and over again that they have not been able to really pinpoint what has been the problem. So it's definitely been a weird season. There's been great pockets of hockey. There have even been good pockets of hockey, but there have also been some bad ones. And the bad ones over the last month and a half have definitely overshadowed the good ones.
What's been the integration like for the new guys, Hanifin and Mantha, into the lineup, and how have they slotted in?
Yeah, I think right now what we're seeing is Noah Hanifin has definitely been a seamless transition to that left side on the top pair. I think it helped that Alec Martinez went down with foot surgery right before they acquired him, but the fact that he was able to jump right in, and I think what's helped is that he's playing the same system he said in Calgary to what he's playing now in Vegas, a very similar type of system. So I think that's definitely helped. Anthony Mantha definitely been a little bit more quiet. I think a lot of people may have expected a little bit more of an offensive push from Mantha in a contract year, and he's at a 20-goal season, but it definitely hasn't clicked yet. I don't know if it's more so that he needs to find the right line mates, or if it's just really just put him in there and hope that it sticks until you get to the playoffs, or the Golden Knights do there, and if Mark Stone does come back. But obviously the other excitement is they're hoping that Tomas Hertl will start skating within the next week or so, probably when the Knights go on their road trip next week. If he starts skating and he's ready to come back, that's another element that the Golden Knights are going to very much well utilize. And I know that they're very excited to at least get him in the room and get him involved and up to speed.
That is the one of the things, too, I look at here with a couple of key bodies obviously out with Stone and Tomáš Hertl. It feels like a couple of guys might be miscast right now in slots in the lineup, whereas previous season, last season in particular, even when Stone missed, it did feel like they could survive the depth, and I'm not sure if that exists right now.
Yeah, there's definitely some interesting parts that are kind of out of place right now. Chandler Stephenson on the left wing on the second line right now. I think it's because a couple of things. One, he just has not played as well this year as I think a lot of people were expecting for him to be in a contract year. But also you're seeing the emergence of Nicholas Waugh become a very viable 2C, 3C when he's normally been a 4C for the Golden Knights this entire time. So that's one area, absolutely. I think they're still trying to figure out who to play on the third line left wing between Pavel Dorofeev and Paul Cotter. I think that battle is going to extend into the playoffs. Cotter slotted back in on Tuesday. Dorofeev's dealing with something minor, but Bruce Cassidy was going to put Cotter in the lineup regardless. So there are definitely some things that have kind of thrown off what the Golden Knights want to do, and I think it also helped, though, that William Carrier is back, so you add that identity back to your fourth line. And now, and as I mentioned earlier, you're dealing with a third pair shuffling. So there are definitely some miscasts along the way. But if the Golden Knights are starting to feel like that their game is getting back to a strong point, at least that's a good sign compared to where they were 2 weeks ago.
Just kind of comparing the schedules, I was looking at the Wild last night and the Blues last night, and there's some easy games for all three parties here. The Golden Knights get the Kraken, the Blue Jackets coming up here, but they finish against Chicago and Anaheim. When you slot out the schedule here, when do you feel like there's going to be a real panic moment if it does present itself?
I think it's going to be that four-game road trip next week because you're dealing with St. Louis, who's on your tail. You're dealing with Nashville, who's playing extremely well right now. And then you got the Winnipeg Jets on next Thursday, which, of course, the Jets could very well be the first-place team in the West by the time it's all over. And then you get the first of two games against the Minnesota Wild before facing them again on April 12th. I think it's good. It's a bit of a combination. It's good and it's bad. It's good that you're getting Seattle and Columbus in this stretch here. It's bad in the fact that you had to come back from two down to beat Seattle just last week. Mm-hmm. And then 2 weeks ago, you go into Columbus to wrap up a five-game road trip and probably play your worst game of the season, bar none, against the Blue Jackets. So if they don't come away with wins in both of those games, I think that's when the panic is going to start creeping in, because then you're going to St. Louis and Nashville back-to-back, and if you do not get off to a strong start there, things could go haywire very quickly.
Hey, Danny, we appreciate it as always. So it'll be fascinating to watch this end-of-season chase between those three teams. He's Danny Webster, at DannyWebster21 from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Vic. Thanks for having me.
It's Danny Webster joining us here. It is fascinating to see what that team will do. And I know there's not a lot of people rooting for them because of the LTIR shenanigans, but it's this next 10 days. So they play Seattle tomorrow, Columbus, as Danny just mentioned. Then they go St. Louis, Nashville, Winnipeg, Minnesota. Then they play Vancouver. So it's a tough little seven-game stretch here. And you look at Minnesota, they go L.A., St. Louis, San Jose, Vegas, Ottawa, Colorado. But they also get Chicago, San Jose to near the end of the season. And sneakily, through it all, St. Louis might have the easiest schedule amongst them. They'll play Ottawa here. They'll play Calgary and San Jose before the end of the month. They'll also get San Jose, Anaheim, Chicago, and Seattle to wrap up the season. Throw in a Carolina, Dallas there at the end, but St. Louis might have a sneaky shot to close the gap in that wild card chase. You know, 10 days ago, 15 days ago, you know, I sat here and said, these playoff chases don't look too entertaining right now. All of a sudden, the East has gone snail's race here with Detroit, Islanders, Capitals, Sabres kind of hanging around. And the West, the Golden Knights have made it real interesting. They could be sliding out before we know it. But they could also be the Canucks' first-round opponent. All right, on the other side, Randy Mueller will join us, former NFL executive. He's the host of the GM podcast on the Athletic Football Show page. I will chat with him about the NFL offseason and pro days beginning, including the number one overall pick, potential number one overall pick, Caleb Williams. He'll join us next on the other side here on The People Show, Sportsnet 650.